Hey everyone, and welcome to a brand new year, brand new episode of Vodka O'Clock Podcast. It's 2020. Everybody's making jokes about the roaring 20s, so expect a lot of themed parties this year. I'm Amber Love, your host, and I'm from amberunmasked.com, the website. So anything that you really want to know about me or about my books and the cats, of course, you can go to amberunmasked.com. And all of this is funded through Patreon, patreon.com/amberunmasked. Joining me today is a friend of mine who, I gotta say, I can't remember how we met, but Mario Candelaria is here, and we're going to talk about comics and just fun stuff, what we're into and what's going on in our process. So welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
So can you honestly remember how we met? Because I really don't.
Yeah, it was back when I was promoting my first graphic novel, Ashes. I think you were friends with Carl Slominski, who was the artist on that.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yeah, and I think during a promotional tour, or a virtual promotional tour, you had us on. I don't know if you had us both on, but I know I was on. And yeah, we just kicked off from there. What, 6 years ago, I think?
Yeah. Oh, Carl's so talented. He's like insanely talented. But that's great. Yeah. That's cool that you remembered. Ashes was, you know, one of those punch in the gut books. You don't shy away from subjects, at least not that I've noticed.
No, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, I mean, that was my first real highly published book. And I mean, I'm happy it got the reaction such as yours. I mean, I honestly, as a creator, I wish it could have launched me further, but you know, that's part of the game, which is, it's just luck and keep putting stuff out, I guess.
Yeah, and I know that you've worked with Dean Haspiel, who's amazing, and in my opinion, he's, you know, a modern legend in comics. So you know, it seems like you at least keep putting out like one thing a year, you know, just keeping yourself present.
Yeah. I mean, Dean is like a mentor to me. I learned from him. I still learn from him. Keeping up with his stuff, what he did with the Red Hook on Webtoons now, I believe. But yeah, I mean, I've been slinging it in the indies hard. I've been doing a lot of anthologies, just, you know, keeping it out there, you know, and trying ideas and pitches, lots of failures, but you know, you just keep going, and hopefully, you know, the stuff I'm putting out now is going to, you know, grab some attention.
So let's talk about the wins and the losses here, because it's definitely, even though we can use the word saturated, because there's a lot of creativity out there in the world, there's still very little of it that's funded. So how do you plan your whole process to get into production?
I honestly wish I had a responsible plan, but as you know, ideas just come to you on a whim sometimes, and the ones that really stick with you, I feel, are the ones that are worth investigating. And you know, from there, it's just putting an idea together, or maybe with comics, at least you have a visual look that you want to try to strike. And so you reach out to artists, and that's the hardest part for me. It's not finding artists, but coming up with the capital to make sure that they're compensated. That's actually a personal issue in my household. Because I work a regular job, my wife works a regular job, and we both have you know, life goals. But if I'm constantly putting aside $2,000 for something that might not ever even make it to, you know, the next step, let alone recoup an investment, you know, that's just something that a lot of creators, you know, have to go through.
You do, and all of a sudden you have a room filled with boxes of comics.
Not even that. I mean, just like Okay, I put together a pitch for a book that was actually just picked up, thankfully. And looking at the cost of line art, color art, letter, and editor that I hired to look at the whole script with me before we can do the pitch pages, that right there was $1,200.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah.
that's
It's that's when people say, oh, comics is more accessible now than ever to get into. I'm like, where are you? Like, who are you that you think this is the most accessible? Like, it used to be a job. You used to apply and get a job and get a paycheck and
Yeah.
health insurance. It's like, how is this accessible now?
I mean,
I don't know.
we both have a lot of cartoonist friends who can do it on their own, and I can see for them how that's accessible, but I can barely draw breath because of my asthma, let alone draw a picture. So it's one of those things that, I have to outsource that visual representation to try to get my idea out. And unfortunately, just like in anything in life, you can try to find cheaper options, but it might not be a quality that you're looking for. And, for the final product.
Exactly. And I know in that regard, since we're both like, New York metro area people, right? So even though there's obviously a lot of creativity here in our particular region, some people do look for more affordable outsourced help from South America or Europe, and then they have language barriers to work with. So it's like, okay, well, is I can't remember who just wrote it, but it was a tweet that made me laugh so hard because it was someone, there was a tweet that said, never, like, never complain about your editors. And then the response tweet was, are you kidding? Because apparently the word tit is part of a horse carriage. And so this author wrote something about tits and doing something with the horse carriage, and then the editor went through and changed it all to just say boobs. And then it, like, so it literally made no sense that a horse carriage had boobs on it, and it just sounded like the funniest editorial issue ever.
Funny.
But there are these unusual relationships that people have with the creative teams. When you get something done, though, are you always pitching, or do you sometimes just say, I'm putting this one out myself?
I want to say both, honestly. I tend to have a lot of irons in the fire, and right now I think there are four stories that we are or have been pitching to publishers, but there's one that I know that based on the concept and the strength of the artist, it would be better just to go direct crowdfunding. Because we both don't have big names where one of us can just sell ourselves to the publisher. And it's a concept that is not necessarily commercially beneficial for publishers, for marketing purposes. So it's one of those things I'll, like, well, this is a story I want to tell. So, I'm gonna get it out regardless of what we're doing. And
I think, but I think that's what the crowdfunding is really intended for, for, and I think that's the beauty of it. So I just want to ask, piggybacking off of that, how you feel when there are publishers themselves or even studio producers that then take to Kickstarter and end up funding things for, $200,000 or $1 million or whatever it may be. I forget, I can't remember if it's, I don't know if it's Dark Horse or Archie or somebody was planning on launching something. And it's like, you've already got huge names. How do you not have a budget and a plan?
Yeah, that was Archie when they were rebranding and relaunching everything with Mark Waid and Chip. I can never pronounce Chip's last name.
Oh,
on Jughead.
Zdarsky, that Chip?
Yeah,
I don't
honestly,
know.
Chipsy,
Chip.
but
Chipsy, we know who he is, yeah.
yeah, it was Archie, and it was one of those things that had me scratching my head. Like, okay, I mean, you gotta respect the hustle. If there is a dollar to be made, then there is a dollar to be spent, right? And I don't know, like I come from a family that, you know, wasn't necessarily 100% legitimate all the time. So if like this kind of an unofficial motto that money doesn't know where it comes from, and it wouldn't give a damn if it did. So you
That's the
know,
thing. Like, but when you see the president of the organization driving around in fancy cars, you know that they're not hurting for money.
exactly. Unless that's just a new marketing ploy. They're just like, oh hey, because that did get people talking more so than just, hey, here's a commercial coming out on CBR stating that we're relaunching, you know, Archie.
Yeah.
That did get buzzed. They did cancel. I did back it actually because I was really interested in the characters. And even though they canceled it, they sent all the backers some free comics.
That was nice. But then I know that this does happen, and Archie happened to bail out of that particular one. Other smaller press does it, like Action Lab, Devils Due, but then there's like the Veronica Mars movie went to Kickstarter. It's like, okay, really?
Yeah, like I said, I have two trains of thoughts in it. As a struggling person, it's like great, now there's more competition on that market for, you know, that revenue. But it's also, I can see that maybe a studio or producing investors don't necessarily have the confidence to release something. So a creator says, okay, let's try to bring it to the fans that we know we have. I
Yeah,
mean,
I mean it is, and
it's
that's one
conflicting.
thing. It removes the obstacles, and you are directly involved with your fans then, which is incredible. But then I feel so bad for all of the indie creators that are like, trying to get their low budget indie film made for $10,000, and get it created and off where everybody's just working for Twinkies, and
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
I mean, I think you and I would both love to be that creator that launches something and it gets funded thousands on the like within the first few hours. Right?
Yes, I know, and I've seen that happen. It's really something. It's like all of a sudden you see somebody, and it's like their 24-hour update, their 48-hour update, and meanwhile, I have dear friends who are like begging through the entire like 21, 30 days. Like begging, like, please, even $5, like,
Yeah, it's I've been there. I've been that guy. It's stressful. It is nerve-wracking. It's you don't want to feel like you're begging, but you also don't want to feel like, oh, I'm missing out an opportunity for someone to see it, and then that could be the person who says, oh, okay, I didn't see this before. Let me fund it. Yeah, it's hard, and especially on anthologies. I produced an anthology for Red Stylo, and we did it through Kickstarter. And while it was a phenomenal experience for me being a producer and editor on that, I was a nervous wreck the whole campaign. I mean,
Oh.
I put the thing together. I was emailing the creators. A lot of them were sharing it, but you know, sometimes if you don't feel like someone is doing something up to your standards, you kind of start to get a little annoyed. Not saying that, you know, anyone is really annoying me, but it's just an internal feeling of just like, oh crap, you know, how come no one's sharing? How come no one's sharing the link? How come they're not doing it themselves? They're just liking and retweeting something I put out and
Yeah,
tagging me.
and that's something that comes with marketing and promotion, is it's supposed to be organic, which means that they're supposed to craft an original post with the link, and that gets more results than the shares. So it's, even like there have been times when I've even like written the copy and just been like, can you just take this copy, it includes the link, and just like paste
Yeah.
it.
So yeah, I mean, you get it. You know, it's That's the worst part for me, I feel. It's the campaign. That anthology Baroque Pop actually got funded in the first week, and I was like, oh wow, that is amazing. But we didn't
Yeah.
double, like week one through week four, we saw maybe like a 50% increase. But I think once we hit that finish line, we might have, pulled back on the throttle and slowed down on, the like pushing it.
Right. Yeah, because
But
there's going to be that curve,
yeah.
where a lot of people don't jump in until the very end.
Which is weird because it doesn't charge you right away. I mean, I'm kind of like a day one, like, oh, if I remember it, I'm going to do this right now type person, so I can just set it and forget it.
If you're hearing strange noise right now, Gus is rubbing his face on the microphone.
No, it's fine. That's cute.
Yeah. Thanks for participating, pal. Okay. Great. So, we always sort of combine promotional work with our actual physical appearances at shows. And that's a whole nother expense, that gets to be a huge burden. So like you were saying, you and your wife work full time and sometimes still, it's like, oh, but the car might need to be repaired and that's going to be $1,000, or we gotta, fix the roof and whatever it is. It's like traveling to conventions is a huge expense. Some people only do one a year for that reason. They'll do like they'll bank on one big show a year.
I wish I had more experience with that. I usually do New York Comic Con, and I will piggyback with Enrica on Red Stylo for a day or two. As I've gotten older, I've gotten more social anxiety, so I don't really like being around a whole lot of people.
I'm right there with you. Oh, me too. I haven't been to a big show in years. I've
And
gone
my
to
wife,
small shows.
I've done smaller ones with Z2 when we were promoting Ashes, but I told him like, hey, I'm just gonna come down for a couple hours, take the bus up from Philly to New Jersey or something and hang out for a bit. But I've been last year and this year I've been doing San Diego, but not as a creative but more of as a fan. Because I
Okay.
felt like I might have lost touch with why I like this stuff. I'm not choking up for tears. I'm going through puberty
Oh,
again.
that all.
Excuse me, I cleared my throat. Okay, yeah, no, I felt like, honestly, I felt like I was so ingrained, just trying to be like, okay, I can go to here and try to network with this thing or do an industry party and try to see who I meet and try to get seconds of time. But then it's like, oh, I think I'm losing touch with why I like this. So I wanted to do San Diego again last year as a fan, and just take in the stuff, do panels, try to grab freebies at booths and exclusives and things, just, try to get with the people.
Well,
And
I think that's really important though, because
it is.
there's a point where I think a lot of creators turn into these crotchety, bitter people. And if you were to ask them, oh, well, what comics are you reading right now? And they'll say, I don't read comics.
Yeah, I know some of those guys. They're fun. They're a hoot.
Yeah. It's like,
Yeah, I mean,
okay, well, you're at least your bank account's happier than mine, whatever, but it just seems so weird.
I think you might see the posts that I put up. I try to go to the comic shop at least once a month, and I have a lot of indies on my pulls. And, I love my X-Men, since day one, X-Men. So, I'm always taking pictures and promoting the stuff that I'm buying and actually reading rather than just, retweeting a friend that sent me a PDF of their preview issue for free. I like putting my money where my mouth is as a fan to support people rather than just, trying to, I guess, push and network my way in. I don't know. Maybe that's why I haven't had success. We'll see.
Yeah, but it's true. You can find dollar bins, or you could find, if it's Comixology, they have a section specifically for free books. If you have enough to get into any of those subscription services, which I haven't even looked into, but the unlimiteds, I'm sure that's a fantastic way. It's like having a library that you pay for. So a library is another option. Some libraries will carry comics, some won't because they get stolen a lot. So it depends on where you live.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest purchasers of Ashes were libraries. Not saying that we sold tons and tons, but I believe that a large chunk of that did go to public libraries. But for subscription services, I actually have DC Universe. I got it for the original series, and it's just a cool perk that they also have their full digital library. I think the newest comics are 6 months from street date. Don't quote me on that exactly, but it's not like, you know, day one on there.
And some of the stuff is exclusive to those services. Like Comixology has their originals, kind of like Netflix, you know, Netflix originals, which is where I found Forgotten Home. I mean, I found it because of Erica Schultz and her friends, and she was talking about it. So, when she said that it was on Comixology originals, I was like, oh, that's intriguing. You know, that it's, that they're sort of putting that that support into creative teams that way. And it could be any publisher, I think, but it's getting up to their service first or exclusively, at least for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, there's a lot of birds that chirp about the Comixology originals, and that's the best deal in the game, according to a lot of people I've heard from, as far as, you know, the payout. So, I mean, I would love to, you know, get in on that any way I can. If anyone there's listening, you know, I'm your guy. But yeah, I mean, Erica's been killing it all around, though, so it's no surprise that she's on the forefront of that.
Yeah, I know. She's like, it's so funny because she's been in the game for a really long time. Like they say, you know, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. <It's>, like, you know, she's been at it for a long time, and lettering and, you know, being a production assistant, or I think, you know, whatever she did at Neil Adams Studio. And now she's teaching at Qbert's. So it's pretty cool. And she teaches for Comics Experience, which is how I've met a lot of people. So that's the online school.
Yeah, my friend James Ferguson is on that. He is an emerging writer, but I think he's also a journalist for ComicCon.com. I'm not sure. He might be the head reporter on that. But yeah, I mean, Comic Experience. There's a lot of people I see coming through that. And I think they're putting out anthologies, right?
Yeah, so now they have their own arrangement with pitching and publishing, where I don't have all the details memorized, but at least one part of the team has to have been, you know, a workshop member or student at some point. And then their, you know, their print or publishing arrangements are now with Source Point Press. I think originally it was IDW, but and then it was somebody else, and now it's Source Point Press. I've only started hearing it recently.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, we might have some things in the works of Source Point. I don't know what they tell people.
Okay.
I may or may not have something there. We will see. But yeah, I mean, that's really cool. Source Point is really getting in on the forefront of that. Didn't they sponsor Diamond's Halloween Fest recently?
They might have, I don't know. And that's, I don't think that's a cheap thing to do. That's, because they have different sponsor levels, like platinum and gold and whatnot.
That's really cool. I mean, you know, to get yourself out there. Yeah, I met those guys at New York Comic Con a few years ago, and their booth is not small at all. I mean, they have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it was funny that I found the Squarriors booth, and the Squarriors booth itself, this is an amazing series, and it's about squirrel warriors, if you can't tell. So I didn't even realize that they were in a booth by themselves, a double length booth, and I absolutely fell in love with their comic. And I didn't notice until much later that it was a SourcePoint book.
My friend Adam Ferris has a graphic novel that just got put on previews with them called Parallels. So that's a shout out for him. But yeah, I mean, they're getting out there. And I'm happy for them. They are a Michigan-based publisher. I remember last year at San Diego, they had the Twisted. The band Twisted was at their booth doing signings.
Did they also have a comic? Or
oh, yes, yes. They have a comic.
Okay, I was going to say, there's like a lot of rockers that do that. You know, they have that crossover.
Show up. I believe Billy Bob Thornton might have a comic with them. Not sure. I'm pretty sure. I mean, anyone can fact check that and Google it. But Billy Bob Thornton, yeah, he has a book with them.
That's wild. Because I can't remember. I'm going to slightly lean away from the mic just to grab my stack here for a moment. Let's see. I think that says SourcePoint Press. My aging eyes here. Nope. Yes. No. Good Lord. No, I can't even read this publisher's name. I know that at this one show, I picked up the Bruce Lee comic. And it just says Bruce Lee Entertainment. Well, it says Magnetic Press.
But okay.
Oh, it's Darby Pop. That's what I was trying to figure out. Darby Pop is another cool, smaller press operation.
Yeah, they had Fake Empire with Eric Pilecki, bro.
Yeah, I think so.
They had a really fun superhero comic. Shoot, it's escaping the name out of me, but it was this guy who tended to have superpowers in Los Angeles, where it's kind of like more like The Boys that have like a celebrity following superhero team that doesn't quite do anything. Man, right. Shoot, I just forgot all about that. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a lot of smaller publishers out there doing bigger than, you know, we can remember sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it's, you know, again, it's a matter of which cons you can get to and make these little discoveries, because I don't think I would have known about Sporiers if I hadn't seen this incredible booth, like wallpapered with this amazing art of like squirrels and blood and stuff. And it's like, I'm like, wait a minute, are these squirrels who fight? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, this is exactly for me, because this is what I write about. I write about, you know, the cats and the chipmunk mafia. So yeah, I was, you know, the squirrels that are thieves.
I'm gonna have to check that out. I mean, I don't know if you know, but I have a squirrel, that a reoccurring squirrel that we feed here. My wife Aaron and I, we call him Nubs because he has no tail, so he's very easily identifiable.
Aww.
He comes around and we're like, oh hey, it's Nubs. Give him some almonds and walnuts and craps. Yeah. You know, exotic food.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they are thrilled for that. That's, yeah, we go out and we feed them almost every day. So this morning, Gus captured Sergeant Burroughs, one of our chipmunk mafia friends. And I'm like, Gus, you can't keep the chipmunk. You can't keep the chipmunk. And he let him go.
Okay.
But there's Sergeant Burroughs is one of the higher up in the mafia organization. So it's like, Gus, you can't hurt Sergeant Burroughs. They'll come after you.
Adorable.
So speaking of conventions, though, is that what you have slated is for New York?
This year I'm just doing New York. I mean, I want to see what gets announced when, but I plan on being at New York at least a couple of days. Aaron and I found a hotel that's not too far away and wasn't too expensive. If nothing gets announced, I think I'm just going to make a day trip. I mean, I live outside of Philadelphia, so it's a easily 90-mile drive, you know, to get in. I could park in Hoboken, just, you know, hang out and then just drive right back and still be home you know, before the clock hits midnight. But we're going to San Diego again this year. But again, it's one of those things that if something gets announced before then and they're there, that would be very awesome. But if not, I think this year I could network more with knowing at least what is in the fires and hasn't been announced. I have talking points.
Okay. Yeah, I hope I have something coming. We'll see. Vague, you know, my vague remark here.
Oh,
it's one of those. The second I say anything and try to announce anything, it like falls into the trash and doesn't happen. Word. So I'm like, you know, I gotta stop saying that. Like every time I've announced a podcast guest, I'm really excited about, and yeah, then it never happens. I'm like, God damn it.
That just shows bad character in my judgment on the person who doesn't show up. I mean, if you make a promise, make a commitment, do it, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's just so, I hate when that happens.
I mean, God forbid anything happens, you know, I mean, life does come up. If someone gets in a car accident, I'm going to be like, damn, why didn't they drive 5 minutes earlier and get to my show? You know, but, you know, if it's something like, I forgot, I was making breakfast and I had my phone on, it's like, yeah, if it's something they were interested in, they would have made the time to do it. Like, really stoked about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just it. It's like if you're the person that was forgotten, you're just like, oh damn, I'm not memorable. I started
to make a downturn, but I had a lifetime of that. I mean, I grew up just being my mom, and eventually my mom and her wife. But it's one of those things like I was always waiting for my dad or someone, and I just, you know, I hate waiting for people because, you know, that brings back, you know, shades and memories of that where it's like, oh. Okay, you know, if you're gonna make a commitment and not do it. Yeah. I remember one of the first times my wife and I went out, I think it was the second or third date, and she was like a half hour late to something. This is before we had really like text messaging or anything. And I was just like, I was getting shades of that, and she was just like, the look on your face is so sad. When she finally showed up, I lit up. It was one of those things like, oh, okay, I guess it's just this.
Yeah, like, you know, if you had a dog or a cat, like my cat is there to greet me when I walk in the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, apparently he knows if I'm late, which is weird because my schedule is different every day. And he'll usually, you know when to expect me. And I'm like, you know, people say they're dumb animals. And it's like, I don't know. Yeah. He's smart enough to get me to, you know, clean a litter box and feed him. So he's pretty smart in my book.
I think people that really say that maybe haven't really had animals, or maybe they didn't appreciate their, you know, like having them as an actual living being instead of just maybe an accessory. Because, I mean, animals have cognitive abilities that are really astounding, especially like household pets and such. I mean, your pets, do they like to just play and you know when they're in the mood to play, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Or they can figure something out. They can troubleshoot anything to try to maybe get food out of somewhere, or, you know, burrow to get a door open or something. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Doors are a fun thing. But, yeah, they've even, they've started making puzzle games for dogs and cats to, especially if they're overweight, to try and get them to slow down their eating, that they have to figure out how to get the food out of the puzzle.
Oh, wow. And I think I need that.
I probably do too. I'm just like, I keep the cookies right in the nightstand. I'm like, I need them.
Oh man, that's one of my vices is sugar. I love tasty cakes. And I know this is a comics podcast, but I love tasty cakes.
Oh no, this isn't anything goes show. Yeah.
When my wife sees the Wawa bag, she's like, all right, how many tasty cakes did you get? Usually, I mean, you have to have a trinity. That's what it is. You know, one is fine. Yeah. Three is a crowd.
Yeah. Or what I see when I go to there's my favorite cookies come from the health food store, and they're individually wrapped. But because of my allergies, I go through like every one of them. And anything that has what I can eat, I literally take their entire inventory worth and stick in my basket. And I'm like, okay, I will see you in 2 weeks.
You need those. I mean, craves are, you know, a real thing. But
yeah.
Yeah, so pets have puzzles to slow down their eating.
I know, and I don't.
Yeah.
I try not to be mindless about it. Like I try to savor every bit of it. That's one thing that I will try to do. I've tried to avoid the mindless eating unless I'm just starving. There is something for like, I don't care if I don't eat, I'm going to fall over kind of mentality.
Yeah.
But if I'm actually trying to just enjoy something, I really can just savor it.
Yeah, I mean, ambient eating is a big problem I have, of course. It's like, oh, well, I'm not really, my mind's not busy doing anything right now, so let me just grab something to munch on. I try to chew gum and keep my mouth going, but that's not the same, especially after an hour and a half chewing the same piece.
Yeah,
You're like, all right,
exactly.
I'm gonna do this
No.
in the kitchen.
Yeah, no. My stomach knows what I want, and there's a certain texture that I expect. And yeah, I do enjoy the limited amount of food I can have. I just enjoy too much of. So, but I've been really good with getting my smoothies at the gym.
Oh,
They
yeah.
have yeah they have a smoothie bar, and so the ladies know my allergies and everything, and I've even though like my favorite one is still the one with chocolate and coffee, I because they actually like grind the coffee beans into it, it's amazing. But I have eaten lately, I've switched to one the green shakes,
Okay.
and it's like okay, they
What's in
taste
that?
like yeah though well the one at least has some pineapple juice to sweeten it.
Okay.
But the other one is like spinach and God knows what else. And it's like, and it tastes like a liquid salad.
Yeah. Erin makes her own smoothies here in the blender. She gets kale, she gets flaxseed and pineapples, and I believe water and ice.
Yeah, there you go. Because,
And the
I mean, sometimes,
pineapples to cut down on the bitterness.
exactly, because kale can sometimes be just really hard to enjoy and get down. Unless you feel like massaging the kale leaves for a good hour.
Best time for that.
I know. I know.
This is like 6 in the morning. She should say, oh, I'm gonna make the blender and make this, and you can run out and catch the train.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be ready, or you just get the powdered crap. Who knows if that's any good, but that's what we do. So is that, are you, with you going to the gym and whatnot, do you have advice for creators to not, not end up on GoFundMe for their medical expenses? Like I've seen a lot of, I don't know if writers have this nearly as much, but artists particularly do with their injuries because they'll work the ungodly hours. Like you're not meant to be drawing 16 or 20 hours a day, which was honestly the thing that scared me when I interviewed at Cuber and Joe Cuber said to me, he's like, this is what the workload is. You will be doing work like 16 hours a day. And I went, no. I was like, I don't think so. And that's what some people do, but I believe in a balance. So do you have advice on that?
You just nailed it right on the head. You need to have a balance. I mean, just because someone has done something doesn't mean it necessarily has to become the norm. I remember seeing a Twitter thread recently, and I'll get back to advice in a moment, but somebody stating, like, bragging about pulling all-nighters for 2 years to get something done isn't a badge of honor as much as a cry for help sometimes.
Yeah,
Because
I
you
know.
need to have, you need to go away so you can come back, I feel. And especially with creatives, the more time you can spend out in life and being out in the world, or even just doing something that's not the task, I feel not only refreshes you, but can sometimes, bring you new insight, or maybe you can have an idea spark because you're not sitting there staring at a page. But for artists especially, I mean, that's a demanding task on their fingers, on their ligaments, their joints. I mean, I'm not an artist, so I can't quite go into health routine. But I would really like to see some data on arthritis numbers. If I'm holding a pencil or weird grips, being hunched over. I feel that is a major issue that you could face down the line if you're doing, the set pose and being sedentary for way too long. I've been trying to hit the gym Every day. I couldn't hit it yesterday, unfortunately, because I had an issue at work with one of my guys. So I had to fill in for him. But, I mean, even as a writer, I spend a lot of time sitting down. Even as an office manager, I spend a lot of time sitting down, staring at a screen. It's a lot of not moving. And of course, as I'm getting older, that can cause health issues as your metabolism slows down. So really just remaining active for me, it's a big goal. I have a watch that, reminds me to get off my lazy behind every once in a while. And I need that motivation, I feel, or I can see, okay, I've taken this many steps and burned this many calories. And sometimes people need a reminder or a kick in behind. Otherwise, if they're so caught up in what they're doing, they might not necessarily, be conscious of little things like I need to get some water to hydrate because I don't want to faint because I'm dehydrated. I need to get up and stand to get my blood flow going.
And there are apps that to do that, to remind you of that. Yeah. Because I know there are some tools that people use to limit their internet time.
That exists.
I forget what that's called, but yeah, but that exists. Like you've been, get your ass back to work. You just spent an hour browsing nonsense. And not that it's all nonsense. I mean, I get my news from Twitter, basically. So
Oh yeah, no, there's a lot of nonsense out there. I've fallen down Wikipedia holes for no reason.
Oh
And next
yeah,
thing I know, the
really?
sun is down. I'm like, oh, when did it get dark?
Yeah, it's like, because I needed to research one thing, and next thing I know, I'm, could be looking up 14th century, kings of Europe or whatever. Like it could be anything stupid. It's like, how did I
Yeah.
get here? It's like,
But
wasn't I researching rabbits? Like, what?
I am seeing a lot more comic creators posting like CrossFit style videos. And I'll never be that type of athlete, I think, but I'm impressed. Like, oh, wait, that's awesome. You're doing deadlifting, you're doing, pulls and stuff like that. And I feel like that is also motivating other people, not necessarily peer pressure, but peer, what's the word for it?
Like I inspiration.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's inspiring other creators to think, oh, okay, if this editor or this person is doing this, I can do this too. It could be a bonding mechanism to say, hey, I have something in common with you that we can talk besides comics. But how, I mean, whatever it takes to get you out there. I mean, I go through waves where I will go every day, twice a day for a month, and then just drop off for a month because I get burnt out or I have a pain that I need to let heal or something. But that's just the cycle of life. You need to try to find a way to motivate yourself and get back on there. I had a physical recently and everything turned out great, but it's one of those things that they said they had to get my weight down. I'm around 280 right now, which sounds like a lot, but I am a massive person. So I don't look like I weigh 280 pounds. I mean, I'm like 6'3". My waist is probably like 45 inches thick or so. But and I have super high bone density. But the doctors were concerned, saying, "Okay, you're writing and you're working in an office, try to bring that down."
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, at least hopefully they weren't very shaming about it. I hope doctors are
No,
learning
no.
about, being more reasonable and sensitive and, realizing that we're human.
Yeah, no. My doctor, shout out to Dr. Lieberman. He's really cool. Big Star Wars fan. But yeah, no, he's just like, hey, I'm concerned. He took my blood pressure. It was a little higher. It could just be because of what I was going through, or whatever it was that day. But they wanted to check all my blood, my glucose levels, my enzyme, my thyroid, all that fun stuff to see, why I'm getting larger. And thankfully they didn't find anything. But yeah, just trying to get active. My wife has started replacing all my favorite carbs with vegetable knockoff versions. And
Oh, right. Like the zucchini noodles, the
yeah,
zoodles.
zucchini noodles are my jam now. And I'm gonna get made fun of for that. But if you make a nice homemade red sauce, right? I'm talking like fresh cut tomatoes, the dates, all that fun stuff, the onions, the garlic. You make it from scratch at home or put it in the jar if you don't know how, whatever. If you cook it with the zucchini noodles in like a saute pan, Moi, I'm telling you, it's so good, especially if you put it in like a Tupperware, let it sit in the fridge overnight and heat it up the next day so it all cooks again together.
Yeah.
Amazing. I've been getting cauliflower rice. Not as
Yeah,
amazing,
that's
but
yeah, not as amazing, but I've had some pizza with the cauliflower crust.
That's interesting. It feels like a nacho to me with how thin it is.
Yeah. It is. It's totally different. I mean, but you know, when you're trying, you do what's out there.
I've also like I go to the pizzeria and I ask for a chicken parm with no bread. They kind of look at me funny, but they just end up just putting, sliced up chicken and sauce and cheese in one of those metal dishes.
Yeah.
That works too. I mean, there's lots of ways to make room for, your treats and such.
And let's get into like the other end of health. Let's talk about mental health for a moment. Yeah, because I mean, it's we're talking about balance and life and everything. And when we're in comics and entertainment, anything like that, there's this idea that it's always going to be fun and you're not going to have any stress because you love what you do, but that's not true. There's stress, you know, whether if you're with a traditional publisher and you have deadlines and editors to answer to, or you know, or if you're just having a shitty time, like whatever it could be, there's just because you're creative doesn't mean that you live with your head in the clouds all the time. Yeah, you know, like
It's tough.
I've seen a lot of people being more open about it on Twitter. That's why I was bringing it up. Like it seems like much people are being much more visible.
I mean, there's no hard rule for everyone because everyone has a different, home life. I have my wife, and it's just the two of us. So I, for me, lately, the past year and a half, it's been okay. How can I find time to set aside to spend time with her, whereas instead of just stressing over ideas or being creative, the business end of comics, I'm like, okay, spending time for me, getting clearer is spending time with my wife, I feel. And that's not me sucking up to her. It honestly is. She's my best friend. And I can laugh with her, or I can be sitting in a room wondering, hey, how come I'm not getting an email from a publisher or pushing to try to get, to force an idea out rather than it coming naturally. There's rough patches. Social media is not that great for everyone, I feel. Especially if you feel like you are on a downturn creatively and nothing you're doing is getting success, and you just happen to refresh and everyone you see is posting saying, hey, I just got a deal with this. Here's my book announcement. Here is, I'm going to be doing signings here, or even something dumb that I like to make fun of openly. The typical writer tweet saying, hey, I just got something awesome from Amber in my inbox. Too bad you can't see it. I
Yeah,
hate that
I
shit.
know, right? Those tweets, those like
Excuse my language. That is the basic bitch stuff.
I
And I will
have
make fun
some
of
great
anything.
news. I have absolutely great news I can't tell you.
I
Yeah.
make fun of that so hard, and I end up doing it, and I make fun of myself for doing it. It's one of those things. It's like, I don't know. It reminds me of middle school. It's like, hey, I kissed a girl, and I can't tell you who. It's like, bruh, come on, really? But yeah, I mean, when you see that, I feel, and then if you are on a gray slope yourself where you're feeling down, seeing that does not help. I have a number of friends that we have group chats and such, and we just push each other, motivate each other, and we fire each other up. I'm a big believer in the power of positivity, and I honestly believe that everything has a turn and a reason, and maybe not for a religious explanation or anything, but just if it's not my time now, I'm confident. If I'm confident myself and know to stick it out, it will be my time if I can keep persevering. Because everything you do is a lesson, correct? But at the same time, you are looking at everyone's greatest hits they're posting online, and you are struggling with your own demo tape. But you don't know what that other person's doing. I mean, I look at Ed Brubaker. That guy is amazing. That guy is gold. I guarantee you he is also struggling and looking at someone else. Like, that person is amazing. That person is my goal.
Right. Yeah. And that's just it. Some people, whether it's consciously that they're being private about it or consciously in the sense that they don't want to put stuff out there that's going to bring somebody else down. There are people who, like you said, they post their highlight reel and, it is what it is. It's unfortunate. And then all of a sudden, there's plenty of people that I actually muted, like, who are dear people and wonderful, but I muted them because I was like, God damn it. Like, your life is so friggin' perfect. And then I'll find out like their kid has some horrible disease and, and I'm like, oh, I feel like a jackass.
No, like, I do petty mutes all the time. I'm just like, screw you.
sometimes I do. And I mean, it's a mental health thing. I'm just like, misery loves company. And I need to see people that are expressing the realness of the ups and the downs.
Of course. I've been getting more militant and kind of pushing people to, declare themselves, lately. I mean, I know there's a whole lot of people where shy and timidness is a big part in trying to get out there. It's difficult, and I hope to motivate. I come, like, my mom was in the military, so that's how I motivate people, is like drill sergeant ways, not like necessarily in like berating them, it's being like, hey, this is how it is.
It worked on me.
I apologize for that.
I was like, I don't know if I should send this in, and you're like, do it.
Yeah, I mean, I put out a tweet the other day, and it was hyperbole, but I was just like, I'm like, anyone who comes at me saying they're aspiring is gonna get muted. Muted. I hate the word aspiring.
I do.
It's you are or you're not. I mean, my wife and I had a horrible argument about this yesterday. She takes the side. Yeah, I was just like, damn it, because she always knows the right side of things, I feel. But for me, I feel like that if you're going and saying you're aspiring, then you're perhaps not feeling that you are in your mind, or you're not established enough. But if you can go in, and I'm not saying be arrogant about it, but if you can go in and say I am this, then that might open some more doors from people who can say, oh, okay, you're this, what are you working on? What are you doing? Like, if you're an aspiring doctor, are you pre-med? Are you someone like, who's still in high school?
Are you a resident? I don't know what that.
Yeah. There's no aspiring doctors who are in the profession doing it, because they are a pre-med student. They're a med student. They're a resident. They are an intern. There's whole levels of, the trade, but unfortunately comics doesn't really have that for the most part. People can go to Kubert School, they can say that they're, students, they can learn directly from experienced people who've walked those paths. But who's to say that, my path will be exactly cookie cuttered out for this, where there's, an apprenticeship, and then there's a path, and it's okay, I apply for a job at Marvel, and there's no art internship as far as I know, is there?
I don't know if there's an art one. There was a Marvel internship that I know a lot of people have gotten a big break with.
Yeah, but
they worked their way up. They started, intern, and then like assistant to an assistant, and then whatever. But I think it's usually more on the editorial path.
They have a path that you can follow. You can take your own path, or you can kind of follow that. But I don't think that they have an art department that says, okay, you're going to be an intern here, you're going to work with whatever big artist is out there now in Marvel, you know, and not necessarily shadow them, but just help, you know, make the scans of their physical pages and, you know, if they have physical medium and such. And then from there you learn, like there used to be in the olden days of Marvel.
Yeah, and that was like, you know, a lot of women did a lot of the work and it was uncredited. Mm-hmm. It's not that they were college interns, you know, for credits or something, but they were hired. But they did this work that was behind the scenes to, you know, to make the colors look right or to whatever, to make the production work.
Exactly. But there's no path, I feel like, for current artists to do that, learn that. And then from there, they say, okay, you're going to get a job doing your first book, you know, and here
right.
It is.
Right. Yeah. And with the way things, I don't know, like, I think of like academia, like you spend so many years as a professor and then you get your tenure and then eventually you're the department chair, you know, like there's stuff, there's like a way to go in the same, either in the same big university or at least to propel you to someone else.
But you're never an aspiring professor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, at least not like if you're not actively working in the field, then yes, I can say you're aspiring. Like I would love to go skydiving. So I can, I'm never skydiving. It's like, okay, I'm an aspiring skydiver. You know, like if I'm actually physically going out there and doing something, even if it's not on a high professional level that, you know, everybody be like, oh, hey, you know, you are this, you have arrived now. You know, if you're doing the steps towards achieving that, then you kind of already are, I would think.
Right. And I think a lot of people just misunderstand it with when it comes to writing, whether or not you've landed an agent and a traditional publisher and, you know, which is a totally different ballgame these days. And or whether or not you have commercial success, like you could have an agent and 5 books out, but nobody's heard of you. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, you know, come on, you're out there.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm an aspiring writer. I would say I am. I haven't had major successes. I don't have an agent or big publishers, but you know, I've done enough things that I feel like, okay, I can call myself this. I'm really an office manager, but you know, I'm also a writer. But that is, I feel, a big part of mental health, that sometimes I feel like people are defeated in their own heads before they can get out there and other people can bring them down. You know, like if you're worried about how you are in your mind and maybe you will shy away from something and not do it out of fear that someone else will say, oh no, this is not it, then it's the same result, I feel, as just not doing it at all.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's yes and no. Some people write or create and mm-hmm. specifically have stuff that they're never going to show anybody, you know?
Oh, okay.
You know, cause I've asked that among writers before, like, you know, would you still write if nobody read your work? And most of them just say, yeah, it's, you know, it's not about the reader at that point. You know, it's probably different if you are part of some very successful, like, series work and your fans have expectations and your publisher has expectations. But for, yeah, a lot of people just have stuff sitting on their hard drive or in their, you know, their junk drawer and like, oh yeah, I wrote that 10 years ago. I just never, you know, never took it out, never showed anybody.
Yeah. I would be lying if I said I didn't have that. And I still don't do that. Sometimes just get an idea and put it out. But you know, I feel like if it is something that you want to put out there, but you're afraid of how the reaction is going to be and therefore shy away from it, that could have a bigger mental, I guess, effect on you.
Yeah, because you're holding yourself back in that case. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to fire people up.
Yeah, I know. You're like a cheerleader. It's great.
Even if they want to go against me, like, hey, I'm I'm not gonna like argue against people. Like, hey man, I'm awesome. I'm happy that you are getting fired up. I want to see this passion. I want to see you take that fire and direct it. You know, like, you know, if you can show me, you can show anyone. So definitely, I don't know.
But that's good. That's because that's such a positive spin to be in the community. And this is one of the things that I talked to you about that maybe we could discuss was how it's comics and it should be fun and it's entertainment, but at the same time, humans are humans and sometimes humans are shitty. And so I was on Twitter yesterday, as usual, and I saw this news that a couple very well-known predators and abusers were forming their own publishing company because they got booted from where they were. It took years to get Eddie Braganza out of DC Comics. I mean, they literally would not hire women because of how awful he was, because they would rather have kept him as an editor, like for years. I mean, that's absurd. And it's like, you're really gonna do that to your potential talent pool and your human resources? Like, it just made no sense. So, Eddie Braganza and this Eric Esquivel, who was not that well known, but known enough that he was getting really good jobs, have formed their own publishing company called Alternate Empire. And so those of us that voiced our concerns last night, one of the things we noticed is, you know, the talent people, the creators that they've listed in these tweets and whatnot, it's like, you know, do these people know who these two men are? Like, the fact that one of them is like a known rapist is like, you know, they're out there in comics now. They're coming back and they're planning a Kickstarter for March. Like, it's like we want to be welcoming in comics. We want people to succeed, but we have these bad apples, and just like any industry, just like Hollywood, just like if you're a freaking accountant, there's probably some shitty person in your office too.
It was definitely a weird day. I want to know how they met. I mean, are you supposed to use the registry for networking? I don't think it works like
Yeah,
that.
right.
It's one of those things, like, okay, they
They have secret
obviously know.
Reddit. That's
Yeah.
probably what it is.
Oh.
They're probably on Reddit or 4chan or whatever.
But you know, like, they know who they are, obviously, and they had to have known the reaction. They had to have known. And I get, yes, they're boosting Latinos, I think, in their stories, I believe, right? Like Latino creators and also heroes. I don't know. I didn't read too much.
Something like and allegedly a charity which nobody has been able to find. I tried
Oh.
three search engines and can't find it.
I did see that. It was some Los Angeles learning or other, right?
Yeah.
They had to have known that they were going to get a reaction, and they still went forward with it. I don't know if that's ego, arrogance, or just, you know, honest to goodness, perseverance and pushing through. But I understand that there are people who are just fans and don't know the inner workings of how the sausage is made. And sometimes I envy not knowing.
Yeah, that ignorance, that blissful
Yeah.
ignorance. Yeah, but I'm, you know, because it's heartbreaking when you do uncover it, like when Rock Upchurch beat his wife. I mean, he's rebranded. He's never stopped working in comics, by the way.
Really?
He was always, yeah, and he relaunched, and he just stopped using his nickname Rock, and is now using, I think, John is his legal name. And he's, you know, basically rebranded himself, and that's something that's, you know, it's like, God, this person has so much talent, and I loved what they did, and it's like, but there are certain things that I, you have to be sorry. You have to be sorry for me to forgive you, and I don't think a lot of these abusers are particularly sorry. They just say things like, I know who my true friends are. And it's like, You know, your true friends would have called you on your bullshit.
Yeah. Like, oh no, you're all just haters.
Yeah.
There are haters, but I think on a certain level, it stops being haters and starts being you.
I know. Yeah. Like find the common denominator. Yeah. I mean, Ethan Van Sciver is another classic. I used to defend him because he had been polite to me and to the comic shop and gave us sketches for charity donations. And then when he really went off the rails, this was, you know, years after our auction stuff, but it's like, dude, you're supporting neo-Nazis at this point. Like, I have a hard time thinking that you're even, he's not remorseful. He's still going. I mean,
yeah. I was wondering how come, you know, those two guys, Braganza and the other dude, didn't link up with Comics Kids. And I was like, oh yeah, you're probably a little too dark for them, to be fair.
Yeah. Because they haven't, yeah, when they start showing, like, you know, violence against women and they're, you know, drawing big giant boobs all the time, but that's not how Eric draws. So I don't know, but and I don't know who their talent pool is going to be, but if they were to cater to that fan base with what that fan base wants, then they would absolutely be in Comics Gate stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess there's any group of creatives always has kind of their subgroups that are always a little cringy, I would feel.
It's true. And like I said, I mean, there's it's not an industry specific thing. Like if you go to a trade show for like car salesmen or something, or, you know, pharmaceutical reps, they're known for having their big, huge conventions and partying. I mean, you know, there's going to be a bunch of shitbags in there too. It's like, what do? They're, you know, peddling, you know, mucus medicine or something.
And they use that as their big get to try to get laid, I guess. It's like, hey, clear up this phlegm. Like, oh, okay. It's like, if you want to have a thick discharge, you can take this. Like, come on, guy. That's not.
It's so sexy. Sexy
but,
talk.
I mean, you've seen Twitter. You've seen the reaction that creators are putting out there. If not direct quote tweets or responses, and you're taking a screenshot of the original tweet in case it does get deleted, because that is a very high possibility. And you know, to keep that going, I mean, I think a lot of people are jumping on for the sake of the jokes, which I as a sarcastic bastard, I approve of that sometimes. Not to dogpile on people who don't deserve it, but I feel like in this instance, it was warranted.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we gotta see how the other side lives. Not them per se, but the people orbiting around them, family, friends, who know what's happening and support that. Like, what's going on through the mentality of them?
Right.
The victims, the support structure for the victims who see, oh, okay, these dudes are making a comeback. I mean, Hollywood is full of people who've done stuff and made comebacks. I'm waiting for Harvey Weinstein, honestly, to make a return, because that's just how that world works. And like, do you like a redemption story sometimes? I mean, just in fiction.
Well, I do. I mean, that's something that I struggle with, where like people get on my case because I love Kylo Ren. And I'm like, okay, but there was serious brainwashing, first of all. Mm-hmm. The way I see this character was that, you know, Snoke was brainwashing him, and then the Emperor was brainwashing him. And he literally was not controlling himself as much. And then by the end of his arc, and even all through his arc, he struggled so much with doing the right thing and finding love and compassion. And it, you know, and it finally happened at the end. And we got to see that, though. We got to see the regret and the remorse. And if you go through your own personal story arc without truly being sorry, and only being sorry that you got caught or that you had a bad time on Twitter for 48 hours, I mean, you know, because we know that these, how these news cycles go, like, you know, 2 weeks from now, who's going to remember? There's a few people who keep track of this shit and will pull out stuff from 2013 or whatever. But, you know, for the most part, people, they go through this rebranding, they come out with, you know, oh yeah, I had a bad year, and they're fine. But but fictionally, yes, I love a redemption arc, because it has to make sense. But in reality, I'm seeing a lot of human beings who just are not truly sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. It's one of those like things that, like, we love a good redemption story in fiction, but in reality, you know, we are, yeah. That's a duality, I think, of being human. I mean, when I was a kid, my mom had a friend who, you know, inappropriately touched me, and that has scarred me for fucking life. But uh-huh. I don't really talk about that much, but at the same time, you know, I'm just like, well, I could, take a machine gun and just let these guys die for all I fucking care. Excuse my language, for all I freaking care. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I have been through something. I can see that and how that affects me. And then if I see other stuff going on, it's like, I don't have sympathy, really. If my neighbor accidentally runs over a cat, that's like, oh, man, that's an accident. But if they're purposely going out there and, you know, like murdering animals, it's like, well, I don't want to see your redemption story.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that happened to you.
I've coped with it, and it is a thing, but, you know, it doesn't define me in the slightest bit. Actually, I think that might be where I got sarcasm from.
It could be. You're very good at it.
Thank you.
but it's true, Brooklyn, but, so, but yeah, well, there you go. But it is interesting when there's distance between, you know, you and the other person, like, you know, the closest I got with this Eric Esquivel was, he kept hitting on me at one show, and I kept, you know, telling him no for that particular show. And I was sort of trying at the time, didn't know any of this shit about him. It was before that came out. I was just like, okay, well, you know, maybe at some other show. And he just kept texting me throughout the night, and I'm like okay, but it's, so I don't have, like, I wasn't one of his victims, so, you know, if he ever came out and said he was truly sorry, but he's not, he's just saying I've altered some of my behavior.
Oh, okay, all right.
And it's like, you're still not sorry, you know. And you know, and then you team up with Eddie Braganza, like, you know,
yeah,
it's like, you're not, you know, like, you're teaming up with another supervillain asshole. Like, you're not teaming up with, you know, Professor X.
Oh, it's like in the movie Glass, where Samuel Jackson's like, this sounds like the bad guys teaming up.
Yeah.
I think that's the wildest part about it. It's not like either of them came back separately and said, hey, we're doing this thing. It's like,
yeah,
you know, it's the perfect storm of, you know, the pressure systems coming together and everyone saying, what the F?
And from, and that's just it, as a fantasy thing, you know, things like Suicide Squad or Task Force X, or, you know, we love to see the bad guys being hired and doing something good. You know, Dark Avengers. It's one of those things, but it's fiction we can consume, and it's, you know, there were, you know, you have that thing, like, no, nobody was seriously harmed while the making of this film.
You know, I saw a movie recently, and I see a lot of freaking movies. The Gentleman, Guy Ritchie's film, and I liked it for the most part, but there was one scene where the bad guy to get at Matthew McConaughey was gonna rape his wife, and I'm like, come on, man.
You
couldn't just throw her a beating or something. I mean that's bad still, but it's not like, what's the ultimate worst thing we can do to this woman, you know? Yeah, I mean, that's,
of course,
really, you're a creative person and that's all you come up with?
How some people have such limited storytelling ability.
I mean, she owns her own mechanic shop. You can't think of trying to put her under a hydraulic press and it's coming down and yeah. Matthew McConaughey comes in with the guns blasting to save his wife. You have to have the guy kind of unzip his pants. Like, come on.
Wow.
That's bullshit. You know what I mean? That's bullshit.
That shows a
lack of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Bad judgment.
Absolutely. And that's fiction, and we can, you know, I have no problem. I've called that out in fiction plenty of times in my reviews. I'll be blunt when I say, like, this added nothing to the story.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the movie had a lot of funny beats, you know, people falling out of the sky constantly to the one point where someone said that they need to invest in parachutes whenever they go out because everyone's falling to their death. But they had to have this? Like, come on, man. I don't know.
I haven't even heard of this movie, so this is incredible. Yeah.
The Gentleman? Oh, yeah. Charlie Hunnam? Charlie Hunnam is the blonde guy from Sons of Anarchy, right?
Yeah. He's the hunky guy. I mean, but you said Matthew McConaughey. It's like, come on.
Matthew McConaughey? Yeah. There's a lot of people in it. The guy from Crazy Rich Asians. The main guy is in it.
Oh.
And Hugh Grant?
Really?
Hugh Grant. Yeah, Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell is hilarious in this. You know, it's a Guy Ritchie mobster movie, so you're gonna get a lot of good character. But this one part is like, all right, this
so
drops
like
you from
only
a
one female
plus.
Character, is it?
There's two. There's two, and one of them dies from an overdose.
Of course,
she's the spoiler for the plot. Which
yeah,
her death. Spoiler, it's for everyone. Her death, I was waiting for it to come back and bite the light like in the behind. Nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Of course. Yeah, I see a lot of movies. I have the AMC A-list, which is like $20 a month. But actually, after this, I'm going to the movies.
Okay. Well, I just saw Knives Out, which was brilliant. So.
Oh, that was fun. That was
a good recommendation from all my writer mystery friends. I was like, yeah, you were right.
I did like how they dropped it in the towards the beginning of what it was, and then from there you saw the from at least the perspective of who did it, and then you know
it was
like you saw how it
that
played
way.
Out
yeah it was like this happened, and you know, like Columbo would be done that way, you know, like
yeah.
You got to see exactly what happened and then piece by piece get the extra details.
Wow, okay. Columbo, I haven't thought of that in ages.
I know.
Peter Falk, right?
Yeah. And there was talk a long time ago about how perfect Mark Ruffalo would be to play Columbo, and I'm like, oh my god,
yeah.
You guys are so right. He would do it really well. But let's talk about other things that we're consuming. What comics are on your radar and whatnot?
Oh man, I read way too much. Let me look at my pile that's in front of me right now. I have Oblivion Song from Robert Kirkman. If you're not familiar with this, Lorenzo De Felici is in it. And it's pretty much like one day many years ago, a portal opened up in Philadelphia and took the city away. Like it's like some weird hellscape. And so now the city has rebuilt. They walled off, of course, the area that kind of got taken away. And there's this guy who's going out there with scientists trying to save people and bring them back and scratching their name off the memorial wall. And it's a big thing because his brother is out there. Kirkman usually does a really good job, I feel, of building up characters, and I hope this is one that starts to stick. Mainly because I live in Philadelphia area now. I live in the suburbs, so I can't properly say Philly, but you know, I just like that they get the little nuances of the people in there correct, and you know, it's alternate realities and you know, traveling around trying to find people and then seeing how the survivors have lived in this world and made a life for themselves. And some of them don't want to go back home because, you know, kind of like Lost, maybe, or sorry, the show Lost, maybe their lives weren't all that great out there, but here they are much more than they were.
Got it.
Yeah.
I didn't know the premise of that. I had seen the title, but I didn't look up to see what it was about.
I'm gonna be honest, I read a lot of X-Men. I've loved X-Men since I was a child. That's that's always been my main franchise. In the Dark Ages when we had Avengers versus X-Men and they were kinda, you know, pushing it to the side, I was still, you know, loving X-Men. What's happening now with Hickman, it's fun, it's good. But honestly enjoyed Matt Rosenberg's story a little bit more when it was going weekly about a year or so back.
Oh, weekly? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Matt
wrote. DC was doing something, you know, back when DC was doing that that 52 line, they were putting out a book, you know, the storyline each week. It's like, good Lord.
I like that. I really did. I mean, I watched those weekly.
I can't imagine how, you know, how the creative team feels about it.
Oh, I mean, I watch wrestling and that show's live every week for years. So, you know, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, all right, the creative team's just going.
Oh yeah.
Putting out.
Yeah. See, I'm like, I'm more of a marathon reader and marathon watcher, like, you know, stack up a few and then watch. So.
There's some shows I do that with. There's even some comics I do that with. I mean, I have piles here. But, you know,
yeah, I get to stuff like 6 months later sometimes, yeah.
But I'm sure you have ones that as soon as you get it, you're like, oh, F yes, I need to read this right now.
And yeah, push absolutely. Everyone aside. Yeah, like Forgotten Home, I had mentioned. Mm-hmm. That's definitely one. And there's a couple new ones out. I don't know if you've heard of On the Stump.
No. Maybe.
I'm not sure when it came out, but it's, you know how we're in this impeachment, you know, dumpster fire.
Yeah.
So imagine that the senators and reps, in order to get legislation passed, actually had to get into an MMA ring and duke it out, and that determines how their legislation gets passed.
Wow.
Hey, so the rings are called stumps because it used to be called you would stand up on a tree stump or whatever, and it was called a stump speech when you would go from city to city to campaign. So they've called the octagon, if you will, they're called stumps. So that's promising. It's one issue I think that's out that I read.
Who put that out again?
I think that's an Image book.
Image? Okay. All right. I'll have to ask for it. On the stump. Sorry, I'm writing this down.
That's okay.
Thank you.
I can even double check while we're talking about ones. Let's see. I'm sorry if that's making like clicking noises as I click through.
No, it's cool. I apologize. You're good.
Yeah. No, it is. It is Image. Awesome. And another one that honestly had me laughing, and I think you would appreciate, is called I Can Sell You a Body.
Yes. I've seen the previews. I haven't gotten to that yet.
Okay. And I'm trying to remember who put
that
out.
Barrier?
Yes. Yeah, Ryan Barrier. And I don't know how to say it. Does he pronounce it the French way?
Oh shoot. Is he Canadian?
I don't know.
Maybe,
it might be.
Maybe.
It might be fair. I don't know. But
Ryan, we apologize.
Yeah, Ryan. And you know what, I can even open up an issue here. That's an IDW book. And it's what's so funny about it is that it's about George Cambadeus. Maybe he's also French. Cambadeus or Cambaday. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to pronounce their names. I'm sorry. But it's about this main character who is a psychic medium. And, you know, and he went from having a popular TV show and, you know, all the money and everything. And then all of a sudden people accused him of fraud and he lost everything. But the twist is that he actually really is a medium. Huh. So he's sort of like, you know, like in Dresden when he just became like a private wizard for hire. So this guy is a medium in this schlubby office, and he has a receptionist that he hasn't paid in 2 months, and it's just so funny because then of course he gets mixed up with like the mafia and he gets a new power. So the new power, and where we get the title I Can Sell You a Body, is that if people aren't quite ready to actually be dead, he can exercise their soul from the beyond and stick it into a person who's still alive. antics ensue. Like, you know, you just like put in your own montage there of, you know, mafioso who Don, who's not ready to be crossed over, and he has to desperately look for a body because he's already spent the money that he's been paid for this job.
Yeah. That's funny. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. I like Ryan's work.
Yeah. So that was one that had me really excited.
I have a horror book for you. Might be down with Killadelphia. Just came out from Image.
Yeah. I was just checking that. I haven't read it, but it did just cross my radar.
I mean, I like Philly set stuff. Apparently, I have a type, but no. It's about a cop who comes home to bury his dad, and then they just uncover all these secrets and, you know, more mysteries, and of course, vampires in Philadelphia.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
and Philly's a great city. I mean, I've lived here, and I've lived Philly adjacent for several years now, and it's a good vibe. I don't like the Flyers at all. I'm a Devils fan still, but you know, I'm an Eagles fan, 100%.
Okay, so all right, as long as you don't get like into those like riots that they have after somebody wins a game and whatnot.
Oh yeah, where you punch police horses? Nah, I'm good.
Yeah, and you tip over cars and all that, you know, light shit on fire.
That's just Philly. I mean, that's, you know, that's just the vibe. No, actually, I half jokingly, half seriously put out online saying that I want to write a love story set against the 2008 Phillies riot.
Oh my god!
And I already wrote the opening pages too, where it's like first page is just a location splash high up from the sky of the baseball park, right? And then you have a caption with the commentators saying, "Oh, the Phillies won," and you turn the page, and it's just a double page spread of just the riot that really happened in the streets.
Yeah, and it's just people. Yeah, I mean, and then when you know, like I was talking about, like on the stump, when it comes to the stuff that really matters and passing legislation, like where, you know, where are you knocking over cars? Then no, it has to be a sports thing.
Of course, of course. Let me loot this store because my team won.
Because my team won. That makes sense.
I'm going to flip over this car. This car is red. My team is red. We're going to flip over the car. Oh, man. Sports fans are funny. They're funny. I mean, no, I celebrated with the Eagles. I didn't, like, go out and, like, go crazy. I think I was traveling for work when they had their big parade. But you could definitely hear all the fireworks going off in town. I was in the complex when they went to the Super Bowl. Like, they won that game. I was in the complex for a concert, and they had to delay the main act because the game was going on. Everyone was in the lobby and the bars watching the game.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another thing, because I briefly lived in Pittsburgh, and traffic was a fucking nightmare. Like, traffic was bad to begin with, and it's like, then I actually added the Google Calendar for sports, even though I didn't care, but only because I knew that the bridges would be even shittier.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's why I'm happy to live in the suburbs. I think my wife has off. Whenever the Eagles have something big, or I think when the Pope came to town, her job just like, all right, you're not going to get into the city, so just take off.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, like, it'll take you 2-3 hours to get there.
Oh, I forgot the Pope was in town. Holy cow, that was so fun. They set up barricades and perimeters and like, all right, you can only have a permit if you live here. And there's no cars at all beyond a certain point. So people who live there and park there had to find something else to do.
See, if you look back in New Jersey, we have to deal with Trump visiting all the time.
Oh, man. Jeez, and
he fucks up airspace, my God.
Yeah?
I mean, like, not only highway stuff, but like airspace. The freaking damn fighter jets came so close over our backyard, I thought we were going to be bombed. It was terrifying.
Trump, that big nerd, man, he's the worst, I swear. did you watch Watchmen by any chance?
No, I heard it was amazing, but I didn't.
All right, I kind of want to say this, but I don't want to give spoilers, so do you give me permission?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, there's this flashback to the 30s. And there's this character there called Fred T, who owns a grocery store, and he's in with the Klan. And that is a in Queens, New York, and that is a very without naming names, on the nose depiction of Trump's father, who was a Fred
wasn't in
T,
yes.
who owned grocery stores in Queens and was in with the Klan. And I thought that was brilliant.
That is good. Yeah, that's up. Yeah. And it makes sense. It makes sense to do that. All right. Well, let's see. Anything else that you want to plug and chill while we're before we sign off?
Yeah, my Twitter is the other Mario C, but don't follow me. I don't need your follows, people. If you do follow me, unfollow me, please, because
Oh.
I'm just messing around. Am I famous enough to do a cameo yet, or do you think I have to wait a little while?
To do what cameo?
No, the cameo accounts, where people plug that and
Oh,
they're like,
yeah.
hey. Nah, I'm just joking. My Twitter is the other Mario C, all one word. And my Instagram is another Mario C, just because I lack imagination and creativity when it comes to things. I don't have much to promote now, but hopefully in a few months I'll have some more comics announced. I've been pitching like a madman various ideas, and I have a couple of things picked up. One from, I don't think they're gonna care. One from SourcePoint and one from Scout, but we're circling each other with Action Lab for a third one that I'm really looking forward to. That's more of a comedy series that I hope people like all this stuff so I can maybe get some more work and also buy myself a car because we're a one car family.
Well, good, good, and look forward to those announcements when they're all ready and set to go.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I know you've been supporting my stuff for years, and I honestly truly do appreciate that. I have a hard time with compliments, and I have a hard time, I feel I have a hard time expressing gratitude because I'm so sarcastic. So I'm waiting for, like that to come at me. But I know a lot of people who know you, and you really are a champion of the people, and we do appreciate that.
Oh, that's really sweet. Thanks. Thanks. And then hopefully, if I ever get something to come out, you can help me shill that as well.
Oh yeah, no, I have no problem boosting my friends and shilling for them. If you have anything, just let me know. I don't see a lot of stuff. I deleted the Twitter app off my phone, and I only use the web browser version.
Yeah.
So
Well, that's a smart thing to do.
it's weird because I feel like I'm only tweeting my own stuff. So I have to like honestly go out there and search my friends and retweet their stuff. Otherwise, it feels like, oh, this guy is just doing his own thing for himself. Like I don't want to be self-centered like that or come off like that. But let me know if you have anything, and I will definitely, promote it. I have no qualms about that.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much. And so while we're handing out Twitter accounts, mine's at Elizabeth Amber, and my Instagram is at Amber Unmasked, and Patreon is patreon.com/AmberUnmasked. And you can follow all the adventures with the cats on especially on Instagram and Patreon, because yeah, that's how I get my weekly writing done. That's my commitment, is writing about cat stories. So, always looking forward to new people and seeing, getting to know people out there. So, thank you, Mario.
Very welcome. Thank you very much.